It's a very good thing to be here. My name is Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm in great need of 100,000 Al-Anon meetings. And want to spend some time this afternoon talking about some of the principles of Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous as they get involved with relationships and families and things like that. And this is a special kind of gathering for a weekend. And we get to do things a little differently than in more conventional settings, and I like that. I was fascinated with Jay's presentation this morning on early AA trial and error, as we try so many things and do a whole bunch of things, and the business with spiritualism, which I have a fascination with too. There was a huge increase in fascination with spiritualism after the American Civil War and after World War I. And I think part of that is because there were so many who were killed. Such huge amounts of loss. How can we make a connection with our brothers, with our sons, with our friends who have gone before us? It was a huge amount of grief was involved in that. And one of the great figures, as Jay was talking, I was thinking of a woman I've read a little bit of, a Madame Blavatsky, and you can Google her. And she was an exotic human being with many, many interests and skills. And she was involved in a lot of things, including Indian independence. She's a great spiritualist and metaphysician, Madame Blavatsky. And she became a mentor of a young Indian activist by the name of Mohandas K. Gandhi. And Gandhi is just learning. He was in South Africa. He did a whole bunch of stuff. And then he moves to India and begins to get involved with Indian independence, years and years and years and years of work. And he starts public speaking, and he's not very good for a long time. He wanders, and he drifts, and he gets involved in little details that no one cares about. And at one point, Gandhi is giving a talk. He's a young man, and Madame Blavatsky was there, and he's holding forth, and no one's listening. And Madame Blavatsky stands up and comes over to him and says, "Gandhi, sit down." And he does. So these are interesting folks, and I'm glad Jay helps us be aware of these folks. And if I start wandering and get lost this afternoon, Jay, you get to be Madame Blavatsky, and you can tell me to sit down. We have a bunch of time, and I'd like to make good use of it. And the subject matter is really very difficult. Emotionally, it's difficult, and we might be feeling a little bit. What I'd like to do is talk for about 40 minutes and then take a break. And originally, I thought it would be a great idea to have groups discuss things. That might not work. We'll see in 40 minutes. And then come back for round two and continue talking about a couple of other things about relationships. And I'm a Catholic priest. I have never been married, so I'm an expert. And I have sponsees. I belong to both programs and reasonably active in both programs. And but Al-Anon's tough. Al-Anon's tough. And I do have some fellows I sponsor who have kids. And they want me to say something about the mess. And my response is, for a few years I tried to do that, but I'm not very good at it. My response is, I taught kids, but I don't have kids. You need to go and talk to a mom or a dad. That's your peer group, And if you're a grandparent who's crazy about impossible grandchildren, you need to go and talk to grandparents, because that's the peer group. And the genius, one of the genius moments of recovery is someone who's been there talks to someone who is there. That radical equality. The book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about a variety of kinds of alcoholics. There's this kind, there's that kind, there's this kind, there's that kind. And recovery takes a variety of forms for a lot of us. I was sober for a few years before I decided I could use a little bit of Al-Anon. And my experience in joining Al-Anon was it's kind of like stopping smoking. You stop and you start and you stop and you start and you stop and you start until you really join. And then you join because you are so crazy. I come to Al-Anon sober, but exhausted and enraged. And I would have people say, well, isn't AA enough for you? And my response was, I'm going to be one of those sober people who shoots people. So I need to learn how to deal with an impossible work situation and a very complicated family situation, and I simply don't know the language. I don't know how this works. And what drove me to Al-Anon the first couple of times was just sharp, sheer pain. And then exhaustion, and then pain. And my experience, the first time I went, was I didn't like anybody there. What a surprise. I bump into people who say, could you tell me a really good Al-Anon meeting? And there's no shortcut here. You've got to find your own meetings. I don't want to be bored or depressed. So could you just clarify all that? No. You have to do your own footwork. And if you have the gift of desperation, G-O-D, you will be glad to be at an Al-Anon meeting. If you're not desperate enough, you're going to notice they're too old, they're too fat, they're too thin, they're too white, they're too black, too many are knitting, not enough are knitting. Too many women, not enough women, too many men, not enough men, too many of them, too many. All of our defenses come up, but if you're really desperate, we look good to you. And we're glad to see you. So the first step of recovery, powerless and unmanageable. For those of us who are alcoholic, it has a very clear meaning because we know we're powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable. But that's also true for the people who love us or work with us or live with us or put up with us. Or share air with us. For them too, alcohol is power. They're powerless and their lives are unmanageable because they're with us. In the book, Bill will talk about an alcoholic is like a tornado roaring through the lives of others. It's a good image. And the tornado's over and you just can't come out of the cellar and say, things look good. Isn't it good the wind stopped blowing? And Bill will say, well, a long period of reconstruction is ahead. And for the alcoholic, this deals with inventories and amends and asking God to remove defects of character. And this can take years and years and years. And this is also true for members of the family or friends. The second step talks about being restored to sanity. It's a funny word, sanity. What's it look like? What's it mean? How do I know? I think if you suspect that you're not crazy, I think if you suspect that you might be a little crazy, it's a good sign. Because a lot of us are. I saw a wise therapist. And I was asking him about step two, about this sanity stuff, being restored to sanity. And I said, do you think I'm okay? Do you think I'm normal? Because I always wanted to be normal. And the shrink said to me, normal is 98.6. And I said, well, what am I trying to say? He said, you're trying to say, are you okay? Are you healthy? And I said, how do you know? Especially for those of us who tend to be hypochondriacs. I have those tendencies myself. If I don't sleep well at night, I can usually feel the cancer growing in my bones. And as I was flying here, yes, I live in Oakland. It says I'm from Berkeley and it's misspelled. Come on now. Oakland, spelled right. And as I was on this very full plane, United Airlines, the lady two rows behind me had cholera or typhoid fever or something awful, and she was full of phlegm. And I knew that it would be the Ebola virus before I got my bag out of checking. So my brain goes in those directions. I understand catastrophizing. I understand the end of the world scenarios. I understand doom day. I mean, I get all that. So what does sanity look like? What does health look like? If you're healthy, how do you know? And Leonard the Shrink said, healthy people can do three kinds of things. Healthy people can work. Healthy people can love. And healthy people can play. If you know someone who can work, love, and play, you know someone who's doing pretty well. And I spent several years just trying to figure out what any of those things meant. You know? I come into Al-Anon from a dysfunctional family. Alcoholism and a lot of other things were there. We functioned pretty well. We were your basic San Jose, California, Eisenhower voting, church-going, citizens. But there was a lot of crazy in the family that simply didn't get talked about. The word dysfunctional gets thrown around a lot. In fact, I think we even made the cover of either Time or Newsweek once, dysfunctional families, dysfunctional organizations, dysfunctional systems. I bump into, now this is not judgment, it's observation. I bump into people who say, I just want to find a workplace that's not crazy. And I want to say, what planet are you on? There are no workplaces that aren't crazy. You know? Like, well, I want to work in recovery. Oh, do you? I was invited to come up and speak at an adolescent treatment facility in Northern California some years ago. And I drove up and came with a pal of mine. And the kids were all wearing pajamas on lockdown, like San Quentin. And the staff were all crazy and screaming and shouting and yelling at each other. And then there was the staff, the administrators, and they were in a very smoke-filled room. And I was supposed to talk to the kids, but so they said, come on and talk to us, the administrators. And they'd been yelling and screaming and something got stolen. Anyway, they've been like this for 48 hours. And with the wisdom of Solomon, I said, so do any of you go to Al-Anon? And they said, why would we do that? And I said, because the kids have won. Addiction is calling the shots here, and you've been sucked into it. You know, you're the ones who are miserable. The kids are having a great day. You know, you're little addicts. What does healthy look like? What does healthy look like? Well, everyone here is a workaholic. Well, that's right. We do that a lot. Well, everyone here blames everyone else. We do that a lot. The whole country does that a lot. Soon as something goes wrong, our first tendency as Americans... Thank you. That's a very lucky book. I think her first name was Helena Blavatsky. Thank you, Helena. Very useful. Just before Jay interrupted me, What was I going to say? I thought the image of him in, dressed like Helena Blavatsky with the big hat and the feathers, it's just breathtaking. Blaming. Part of our culture, find someone to blame, find someone to sue, and that'll solve the problem. If anything happens, blame somebody, sue somebody. And we think this is normal. We think this is the way that grown-ups act. It's not grown-ups, it's crazy people. Dysfunctional. Workplaces, home places, hospitals, institutions, churches, please. Schools, graduate schools, universities, research centers, all kinds of people who are surviving as best they can. I used to think that when the word dysfunctional was used, that it was D-I-S functional. Dysfunctional doesn't work. But that's not it. It's D-Y-S. It's a Greek root, not a Latin root. It means it works, but it hurts. If when you pee, it hurts, you have dysuria. It is a common medical thing. And the thing with dysfunctional families is there's some functioning, work gets done, but a lot of people there are in great pain, and we have to learn ways of dulling the pain, of getting away from the pain, of ignoring the pain. And that's one reason why so many of us go into the world of denial. Nothing's wrong here. We're all just fine. How are you? Fine. How are you? Fine. Nice to see you. Fine. So we talk about the elephant in the living room or the rhinoceros in the living room when it comes to alcoholism, and people just talk around it. We use circumlocution. We use equivocation. We lie. But we don't talk about it, because it hurts too much. One of the more recent books that has come out in the Al-Anon literature is on losses. And it's a big book about grief. And if you've been to AA for a while, or if you're from an alcoholic family, or if you have a lot of friends who are alcoholics and addicts, there's a lot of losses. Overdoses, suicides, accidents, great hopes, great futures snuffed out over and over and over again. I don't think I started noticing that till I was maybe 10 years clean and sober. And then I began noticing people no longer there. Someone comes in and there's such hope and it just goes away. Losses. Claudia Black writes a very fine text entitled, It Will Never Happen to Me. And both of her parents were alcoholic and they lived across the street from a very active bar. And she was the middle child. And they observed a lot and they would see people go into the bar and out of the bar. Sometimes with the same partner, sometimes with different partner or partners. And she talked about the craziness. Her parents were over there a lot. And if you have alcoholism or addiction in the family, you get used to crazy. Things are so unpredictable. And for a while, this can be fun. Fun. Fun plus problems. Problems. She'll write about inappropriate behavior. Crazy behavior. You get used to the unexpected, and you can't overreact to impossible things, or you'll just go crazy. So you don't see things. You don't talk about things. You don't feel things. In fact, the three rules that she writes about are, number one, don't talk. Two, don't trust. Three, don't feel. If you don't talk about it, if you don't trust anybody, if you don't feel anything, you can survive. And that's what we're going to do. And those are skills to help us survive. When we come into recovery, we have to learn how to talk about things without blaming or suing anybody. Tell the truth. What happened? We have to learn how to trust some people. And we have to learn how to feel. The whole new vocabulary and language, the language of feelings. And I sure didn't want to learn it. I want a simple life with no emotions, thank you very much. And I want to live in my head where it's safe. My goodness. So Claudia will say one day, she's home. Her parents were out. Her brother and sister are in the house. And she's about 14 or 15. She has a boyfriend over. They're watching TV. Suddenly there is a knock on the front door. Bang, 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 bang. And she opens, and there's a guy from the bar across the street who's had a couple of social drinks and who looks very agitated. And this guy says, "Do you have any deodorant?" And she goes to the bathroom and gets some deodorant, brings it out. He puts deodorant on, hands it back to her. He leaves. She closes the door. She goes back to the bathroom. She comes, sits next to her boyfriend, and he turns to her, and he said, "Who was that?" And she said, "Who was who?" See, if you're going to remember stuff like that, you're going to have to make changes. So you just don't pay attention. You shut down. You shut down to all kinds of things. And it takes, some of us prefer sedation. Now, we can be sedated with alcohol. We could be sedated with marijuana, two of my very personal favorites. We can be sedated with the whole world of chemicals. We can also be sedated through exhaustion and overwork. Stay busy all the time. Stay tired all the time. You won't have to worry about emotions. But when you start getting well, stuff starts coming back. And this can be very unpleasant. People are in AA for a short period of time, and sometimes those first months are the pink cloud. "You're so glad to be here." I was not so glad. I was in a kind of a gray area. I wasn't glad to be here, but I was glad I wasn't out there anymore. It took a while to warm up to you people. But, you know, then you get just so happy to be here. I love meetings. I love the people at meetings. Pink cloud. And then things fall apart. Now what happens? And people will say things like, "Oh, keep coming back. It gets better." So I was at a meeting. I had maybe 4 or 5 years, so I knew everything. And by the way, I noticed people give sobriety dates here. My first day sober was on the day that Gerald Ford was nominated for President of the United States. So you can figure that out. Madame Blavatsky took my brain right away again. This time it was Gerald Ford wearing the hat and the dress, and I just got so confused. Thank you. This lady came in to the meeting and she was complaining. Now, I know you don't do this, but I do take inventory and I do judge. And I didn't like anything about her. So she complained and whined and sniveled. And then it was my turn to talk. And I was confident and mature and so deeply insightful. And I ended my little spiel by saying to this lady, "Keep coming back, it gets better." Which is very condescending, you know, and patronizing. But I was condescending and patronizing. And she looked at me and she said, "We do not say that in New York." And I said, "Well, what do you say in New York?" And she said, "In New York, we say, keep coming back. First, it gets better. Then it gets worse. Then it gets real. Then it gets different. Then it gets real different." And this is my experience. That rings true. Today it's real different. Anyway, I'm sober. Went to an Al-Anon musical. I felt the same thing. What are they singing about? You know, I mean, I think a lot of country western music is written by people who need a lot of Al-Anon. There's a lot of broken hearts and betrayals and being stood up. And I know when I was drinking a little socially, Patsy Cline sure spoke my language. And there's that, "I fall to pieces each time someone speaks your name." You got to get to a meeting immediately is what you have to do. You know? "Crazy for feeling so low." Yes, come on, we'll both go. And this is one that crosses both the AA and the Al-Anon line. It's Ray Charles. And I'll tell you, there was a certain point in the early morning where if I heard Mr. Charles go, "Born to lose, I've lived my life in vain," I felt so bonded to him. So I go to this music. I mean, that's music. Anyway, I go to the Al-Anon musical, and these are perky people. It's very surprising. A lot of them young. Early Al-Anon was mostly wives. And they were very sensitive about that. And there is a thing about we're not AA's cookie bakers. There's a lot of that. And early, we're our own program. We have our own crazy. But mostly it was women, and that had a whole culture. Married women, that had a whole culture. Men started coming into Al-Anon with adult children. A lot of males started coming into Al-Anon, and that began changing some of the culture. So there were men and women at this Al-Anon musical, and they had some whiz kid with a piano who could take popular melodies and write the words to songs. I have friends like that. I admire them very much. And this one was about the family disease, and the music went, "It's 11:30 and the cops are here. I could use the rent to bail him out. Then he'll be so happy he'll give up the beer. But just in case, I think I'll pour it down the spout." Chorus comes out singing, "D-E-N-I-A-L, life goes on, la, 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 life goes on." And just like you, I laughed. I said, "They get it. I know this. I've had friendships like that. I've done that in family stuff. I am a rescuer. I will help you. I will cover the bills. I will drive you home." I had people who did that for me. They'd put me in the shower and dry me off and put me to bed. I mean, all of our little enabling friends, ha, 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 very funny. Then a little boy, young man, got up and sang, "Daddy's in the kitchen with a drunken face. Maybe it was something that I did. Brother Billy touched me in a funny place. It must be me. I'll try to be a better kid." And I burst into tears. And someone with the wisdom of Solomon standing next to me said, "Boy, that got to you, didn't it?" It really did. So my conclusion was to stay away from Al-Anon. I don't want to go there and feel those things. But when I was tired enough and angry enough, I started going. And and it helps me live my life. There's craziness if you love alcoholics, if you marry alcoholics, if you are a mom or a dad to an alcoholic, or, and some of us just don't write country western songs. We also write poetry, and this is a poem written by Ann Kennedy, and she's my sponsor's wife. And it's just a little postcard of an alcoholic evening, and it goes like this. Last night, my neighbor menaced his wife with an axe. He smashed the windshield of her Cadillac in a drunken rage. We heard their screams up on Buck Mountain. So you got that? You got that scene? Ever been in one of those events? Whether it's you or the people next door? Last night, my neighbor menaced his wife with an axe. He smashed the windshield of her Cadillac in a drunken rage. We heard their screams up on Buck Mountain, period. This morning, I saw them in their rowboat, quietly fishing for cod. Their knees were touching. She was wearing his cap. This morning, I saw them in their rowboat quietly fishing for cod. Their knees were touching. She was wearing his cap. Intimate, sweet, friendly, last night never happened. Now, it's hard to explain the smashed window on the Cadillac. But if you don't pay attention to these things, it doesn't really matter, does it? You are really a wonderful person until you drink. And then I don't know what to expect. I thought what I'd do a little bit this afternoon is talk about some of the tools of recovery that I find helpful, then we can take a break, and then we'll do a few more tools in recovery. Al-Anon uses the same 12 steps. I think that Al-Anon is a more subtle program than AA. I think it is. I think it is the ur-rund program of being a human being. Some people do learn this at home. I know some people who are pretty healthy people who don't need meetings. But I needed to learn the most basic things. One of the things that is just, so I'm going to Al-Anon, I'm just starting. I tried it, I didn't like it, I'm back, I tried it. And I went to a meeting that was largely made up of adult children, and I am one of those. I'm the youngest of three, and there's alcoholism all over the family, and we never called it alcoholism. On the Irish Catholic Democratic side of the family, we had characters. Characters. Isn't Sean a character? Yeah, you bet he is. And I found out that in a lot of dysfunctional families and in crazy systems, you speak in code. And you have to understand the code to understand anything. And I didn't know that till I was in my mid-30s. I was so naive. We don't talk about alcoholism in my family. We also don't talk about cancer. If you are dying of cancer, the way we talk about it is, Harriet's not feeling well. That's what that means. And you have to hear with a very deep ear. You go, oh my God, I better go see her now. And that was, my cousin Harriet was dying of cancer, and I was told, you know, Harriet's not feeling very well. Oh, I said, well, I'll get around to seeing her, meaning in the next couple of months. Well, she was then dead. Why didn't you go see her? I didn't know she was dying! I thought flu, you know? Well, you should have known. You should have known. You should have been able to read our hearts. You should have been able to read our brains. I don't do that. You got to tell me. Well, we don't do it that way. Oh, great. Thank you. On the Irish, on the Swedish Lutheran Republican side of the family, we didn't have alcoholics either. We had nervous people. And they would get so nervous they'd be hospitalized. And no longer nervous, come out of the hospital, be fine. DTs were referred to as nervous spells. When I came home, I was sober a couple of months. I got sober in August, Republican convention, August. And a bunch of people were coming, family, up to my parents' house for Christmas Eve. And I was pretty jumpy. And my mom noticed I was jumpy. I mean, she's observant. That's one of the things about being surrounded by alcoholics. You're observant. You're looking for tragedy and danger at any moment. You don't talk about it, but you know it's there. Scanning the room. I have that skill. And she noticed I was a little goofy, and she said, "What's wrong?" And I thought she wanted to know. Now, to save you a lot of trouble, if either one of your parents says what's wrong, what they want to hear is, "I've got a little gas." That's all they want to hear. "I got a little gas. Everything's fine. I'll be fine tomorrow." I didn't know that. I hadn't really figured out the family code of avoidance. And I said, well, this is a moment for mother-son intimacy. And I thought I heard at a meeting that if you tell the truth, the whole family gets well. Now, this is not true. And do not try this at home without your sponsor hanging around. But I said, well, I'm an alcoholic and I haven't had a drink since August and I'm pretty nervous about tonight. And she put down the silverware, looked at me, and said, "You'll ruin Christmas." Because I said the A word. See, you don't. This is not to be talked about, and don't you think you have the gumption to break that rule? We're going to talk around it. Not feeling well. So I come to Al-Anon and large group of adult children. And they said, here are some things we find helpful. And the first thing they said that was helpful was in our recovery. It's not just, you know, learning how to talk and learning how to trust and learning how to feel. They said, we need to understand that a lot of us are great reactors. Give us something and we react. So in our recovery, we have to learn how to act rather than react. It's the first slogan. Act rather than react. And to do that, it means you have to be centered. To do that, it means you have to be connected to a power greater than yourself. To do that, it's really helpful if you have a fellowship of friends and companions and allies. Otherwise, I react, and I don't always react well. I heard this at a meeting, that each year of recovery gives you one more second of response time. So in your first year of recovery, something happens, and within a second, you're saying or doing something. It's knee-jerk, boom, boom. Well, 10 years, you've got 10 seconds. And that can save your life. You know? I've got 36 seconds. And in 36 seconds, here's a couple of things that have occurred to me in 36 seconds when something happens. It might occur to me that what's going on is none of my business. That's another great slogan. A lot of things are none of my business. Even if they're my kids, it's none of my business. I mean, once they're adults, you know. I have a tendency to control for their own good. And I know I have a sponsee who's a gangbanger from Modesto. Very interesting. And I've been around for a while. You learn how you learn, you do what you do. And little by little we've had conversations, and after I was his sponsor for a couple of months, I had the talk. And I explained, in recovery, we learn how to do everything differently. How we deal with stress, how we deal with this. I mean, everything changes in recovery. That was my inspiring little talk. Covered with tattoos. And this young man looked at me and he said, "I am hanging out with an old white guy. I am changing a lot." And a lot of it's none of my business, even though he's my sponsee. I really do believe that. And you check with people, and you check with people, and you check with people. We went to the international conference in San Antonio, which was a great experience, and I hope to see most of you in Atlanta. Texas is so hot, we can't go. Oh, please. Air conditioning, you'll be fine. He'd never been on a plane. He'd never been to Texas. Never been to a restaurant with a tablecloth. He got off the plane. I met him there, and I wanted to watch him. Make sure he did it right. But because of my perfect Al-Anon program, I said, okay, I want to cut his meat, wipe his butt. Are you okay? Take his temperature every few minutes. International conference, very frightening. And I said, it's like taking someone to Disneyland. What you have to do is this. You say, okay, this is the Matterhorn, and in 5 hours I'll meet you back here. I hope you live. And then he took off. This kid who'd never been anywhere. And after 5 hours I saw him, I said, "Where have you been?" He said, "I hooked up with a bunch of Germans." And I said, "I didn't know you spoke German." He said, "I don't speak any German." He said, "I've had the best time." Not how you steward. You should. Oh well. A lot of things are none of my business. And I want to learn how to act rather than react. One of my friends started going to Al-Anon because he wanted to learn how to give better advice. And if you have, that's one of the Al-Anon crazinesses, we're advice givers. Can I give you a little advice? Usually that's someone who hasn't been to a meeting in a few years. And the answer is no. Aren't you using it? This guy's name is Jim H. He said, "I don't judge, I diagnose." That's what he said, which is fine. I was at a meeting in Dallas, Texas, and this fellow talked about the Serenity Prayer. Now, I like the Serenity Prayer. It's short. I like that about a prayer. And the way I've usually understood it is I'm in a knot, or my brain is in a knot, or my gut is in a knot. Serenity prayer. Give me some serenity, period. But that's not the prayer. The prayer is based on a very wise spiritual principle, and it's about act, don't react, is what it is. When is it a good time to make decisions? Not when I'm high. Not when I'm low. I want to be in a middle place. Give me some serenity, some breathing room, some oxygen. a little bit of peace. Because I have to make some decisions. See, there's some stuff I cannot change, and I need to know what that is. And there's some stuff I have to change, and I need to know what that is. So this guy from Texas, Dallas, said, here are three things I cannot change. I cannot change the past. I cannot change the truth. And I cannot change you. Well, that frees up the whole day, you know? I can't tell you how many years I tried to change my parents. I can't tell you. And they would have been so much happier if they followed just a few of my suggestions. When I stopped trying to do that, we got along better. My mom and I had a lot of difficulties. When I stopped publicly criticizing her, we got along better. How does that work? A lot of Al-Anon, again, this is part of minding your own business, it's keep your big fat mouth shut. But, shut! For your 23 seconds of recovery, don't say anything. And then sometimes I realize I don't have to say anything. They get to be who they are. One of my Al-Anon pals is a woman named Stephanie from Texas. I'm surrounded by Texans. How does that happen? And she's a teacher, of course. So many of us in Al-Anon, we're teachers. We're social workers. We're nurses in intensive care units. We're cops. We're not just military, we're Marines. I can't tell you the percentage of those brave young women and men in the Marine Corps who are from crazy families. We're clergy, we're social, we do so many things, we're on the front line so many times. And we're full of idealism and terror and anxiety. 100,000 Al-Anon meetings help. Stephanie is a teacher, and one of her crazinesses is she says she has a need to over-explain. See, she's convinced that the reason you're screwing up is because you don't understand. And if she could just present it to you in a way that you would understand it, you would no longer be a jerk. My mother's version of the story of the exact same crazy was, if it's worth saying once, it's worth saying 500 times. And I can't tell you the white rage I go into when that happens to me as a 65-year-old adult. I know when I was 11, it would just be, let me tell you one more, and if I had had guns, we would have made the news, you know? So coming into recovery in Al-Anon, I had to stop a lot of my reacting to people's behavior. I have about 2 more minutes of material, then we're going to take a little break. And the great insight for me was in my stuff with my folks, or the stuff with my church, or the stuff with my country, or the stuff with the neighbors next door. It's my craziness. Can't change the past, can't change the truth, and I can't change them. But what can I change? This guy from Dallas said, I can change my thinking, I can change my behavior, and I can change my attitudes. I needed to learn some new ways of rewiring my brain. And it takes years. And life is different. Just the simple awareness of acting rather than reacting, and a lot of things are none of my business, has saved lives. I was at the airport in Chicago a couple of years ago, and it's the holidays, and flying is always difficult, and in the holidays it's worse. And I don't talk to people in airports. I don't visit. I don't share. I mostly dislike everybody. Even getting on the plane from San Francisco to here, and disabled people come on first, and I have no problem with that, but this was a really slow disabled person. And I felt the fury. I just felt the fury. And she probably took 2 or 3 minutes. And it was an eternity, and I'm glad I kept my big mouth shut and I didn't have to ask anybody, "Don't you think that old lady's taking a long time just because she can't walk?" I didn't have to say that. And I could let myself feel the discomfort and keep my big fat mouth shut and wish them well. But my first 2 or 3 to 5 thoughts aren't friendly. So I'm in Chicago and it's the holidays and people are tired and people are cranky, and there was a family. Now, I used to, you have children on the plane, oh, this isn't going to be good. Stephanie Miller talks about screaming baby airlines, and, you know, I can just get hostile. So, because it's my convenience, right? So, but I've been in Al-Anon for a while, and I've been sober for a while, and I'm an adult, and I have a little bit of compassion, and I realize if you're a mom or a dad, and you're traveling with a couple of kids, you need all the love and support you could get, because this is terrifying, you know, terrifying stuff. And there was a little boy, there were a couple of kids. The little boy was 6 or 7 years old, maybe younger, I'm not sure, I'm not good on kids' ages. But he was done. You know, they had flown in from somewhere, they were flying out to somewhere, and his face was so red, and he was just crying. He'd reached the end of his little emotional rope, and he was done. And I witnessed the scene, you know, just with the cold, cold, detached self. And what I wanted to do, what occurred to me, is I could go up to the mom and simply say, "He needs a drink." There is no one in this airport that needs a drink more than your little boy. And if you gave him a drink today, he's going to have a much better day. You'll have trouble later on, but you can get through today. But I kept my big mouth shut because it was none of my business. It was none of my business. Learning boundaries. Learning appropriate behavior. Learning how to keep my big mouth shut. Learning how to ask God for help. Learning how to live and let live creates a whole new earth. How's this? And we'll do this by the voice of the people is the voice of God. Ten-minute break, and then come back, and we'll see what happens. Or should we do small groups? The voice of the people. 10 minutes, come on back.